Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, we have Brenda Hayes and Sue Dressings together for 25 years. Brenda is a native Californian from the Central Valley. She has BS degrees in administration of justice and managing information systems. She played softball in high school, college, and adult recreation leagues. In August 2017, Brenda retired after a 33-year career at Hewlett-Packard. Hello, Brenda.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to participate today.
You're so welcome. And then we have Sue Dressing. Sue was born in San Francisco and grew up in Roanoke Park and has a BA degree in business management. When Sue moved to her aunt's home in Menlo Park, she signed up for a softball league in Palo Alto and met Brenda. We have a softball romance. Same with Diana and me, by the way. So Sue has a 15-year career at HP Hewlett-Packard in Silicon Valley. And she and Brenda lived in San Jose and Campbell before moving to Santa Rosa in 2012. Sue, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So you have to stay tuned to learn more about Sue and Brenda. But first, here's news and events from our Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of March 7th, 2021. According to Gallup's latest update on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender identification, 5.6% of U.S. adults identify as LGB or T. The current estimate is up from 4.5% in Gallup's previous poll conducted in 2017. More than half of LGBT adults identify as bisexual, and about a quarter as gay, 11% as lesbian, and 11% as transgender. The vast majority of Gen Z adults who identify as LGBT say they're bisexual. This means that 11.5% of all Gen Z adults in the U.S. say they're bisexual, with about 2% identifying as gay, lesbian, or transgender. And this week, the American Psychological Association approved a resolution with several very strong statements declaring gender nonconforming identities and expression to be a normal variation, not a disorder. In 1973, the American Psychiatric Association removed sexual orientation from its list of mental disorders, and the resolution passed this week makes a similar statement about gender. The seven-page document includes, quote, that the APA opposes the idea that incongruence between sex and gender is a mental disorder, and, quote, that transgender and gender non-binary identities, as well as other gender identities that transcend culturally prescriptive binary notions of gender, represent normal variations in human expression of gender. And finally, quote, that neither transgender or gender non-binary identities, nor the pursuit of gender-affirming medical care, constitutes evidence of a mental disorder. And here locally, the San Francisco Community Health Center announced a Show of Hope featuring a special musical performance by Darren Criss. You might remember him from the hit series Glee. This first-ever televised fundraiser spotlights pandemic outreach initiatives, programs, and services, especially for LGBTQ people and communities of color. The Show of Hope will air on Sunday, March 21st at 6:30 p.m. You can see the half-hour presentation on ABC Bay Area and concurrently via live stream on ABC7 Bay Area's website and Facebook Live. The show will be hosted by ABC7 Mornings anchor Reggie Akee and the television personality Dale Johannes. It'll feature special guest appearances by San Francisco Mayor London Breed, comedian and actor and activist Margaret Cho, writer, television host, director, and producer, and transgender rights activist Janet Mock, supermodel Ted Speaker, and transgender advocate Gina Rosero. There'll be a special musical performance by Emmy and Golden Globe-winning actor Darren Criss. And finally, this April 1st, our amazing news partner, the Bay Area Reporter, will celebrate its 50th anniversary edition. The paper was founded in 1971 and and is regarded for practicing advocacy journalism and producing original reporting on news and culture from the LGBTQ perspective. The anniversary issue will include highlights from 5 decades of history, including a timeline of the paper's coverage of LGBTQ civil rights. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. And in studio, we have Brenda Hayes and Sue Dressing together and married together for 25 years. I'm not sure how long they've been married because it was only legal in, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, together for a heck of a long time. Thank you both for taking your time out of your busy schedules to join us tonight. So let's start with you, Brenda. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do for work, passions, hobbies, things like that?
Okay. So I grew up in the Central Valley and I'm the youngest of 4 children. And I also went to college in the Central Valley. And then after graduating, moved to Silicon Valley and went to work for Hewlett Packard, where I was employed for 33 years before retiring in August of 2017. And in those 33 years, I had 21 different jobs. And that was one of the coolest things about being in an environment that was as large of a company as it is, in addition to having some phenomenal mentors along the way. That I interviewed for 2 jobs, the first job I had and the very last job I had. The rest of my roles were really offered to me based on having worked with people previously. It was a very fulfilling career and I really enjoyed my time there. I felt like I grew up there.
So I'm dying to ask you, you had 21 jobs and you interviewed for 2, the first one that you had and the last one you had. So I'm dying to know, like, I can imagine the first one, but tell us what it was and then tell us your transition to the last one that you had to interview. Tell us a little bit more about that journey.
Okay. So the first role that I held at HP was in security. So I left a little bit of information out of my bio. I have that Administration of Justice degree from University of the Pacific. I was a CHP officer for a brief period of time right out of college. And I was in a car accident and I injured my lower back. And after therapy and trying to go back to work, something that a lot of people don't think about is, number one, a CHP officer is in and out of your vehicle 30 to 40 times a day. And you have about 30 pounds of weight on your belt, between your gun belt and all the things you have on it and your vest. It's a lot of stress on your back. And I found that I really just couldn't do the job anymore. So they offered me a different position, which I declined. And I went to work for Hewlett Packard and I investigated employee accidents that occurred on HP property in the Bay Area. HP had about 15 different sites in Silicon Valley. So, and they're big sites, they're campuses. So there actually were quite a few little fender benders on those properties. And I also investigated employee theft. So that was my first interview, was kind of moving from the public sector into the private sector. And then the last job I had, which is the one I had to interview for, which is kind of an interesting experience because it was in cybersecurity. So I started my role in physical security and I ended it in cybersecurity 21 years later. And we had a lot of fun at HP. We played on recreation softball teams. We did lots of gatherings together as work groups. And I was able to continue to play softball through HP and then also played on a city league team in Palo Alto. And that's where Sue and I met. And, we left Silicon Valley when we were both had opportunities to work remotely. And we decided this was an area where we wanted to retire in Sonoma County and felt the opportunity was there. The timing was right. And we moved to Santa Rosa in 2012. And had a great time. We worked, we met new people. We had some friends that lived here previously, so we already had a built-in community. We also had Sue's family that lived here. And it worked out really nice. I retired in 2017 when I was going to have to start going to the office. The company policy started changing and my office was in Roseville, and that didn't seem like a commute that I wanted to do every day. And it turns out it was a good thing I did retire, because 2 months later, the Tubbs fire consumed our home and everything in it. And the fact that I wasn't working and didn't have other commitments allowed me to focus on our insurance claim, helping other folks who were trying to pull their insurance information together, and then also overseeing the construction of our home and rebuilding. And we were able to move in March 2020, and we're just kind of settling in and nesting and kind of feeling better about life. COVID has been very difficult to not be able to get together with family and friends. We used to entertain in our home a lot. We envisioned entertaining in our home when we rebuilt it. And so far that we've only done that minimally, but we look forward to the day when we can do that.
Wonderful. We will go deeper into the fire situation that you experience and that journey, but let's hear from Sue. Won't you give us a little bit more about yourself?
Okay, I will. as you said in the intro, I was born in San Francisco and grew up in Roanoke Park. I have one older sister and we're 17 months apart and we're very, very close up until adulthood. And we can go into that more, why we're not so close. Locally, I went to the junior college and played tennis on the women's tennis team there. And then I went to Sonoma State, where I also played competitive tennis. Loved it. For me, playing sports is my comfort zone, and it allows me to meet people. I'm confident when I'm playing sports, so it's much easier for me to engage with people and just feel good about myself playing sports. So it's always been an important part of my life. I was, my last semester at SSU, I was the assistant coach, which was very cool too. I really enjoyed mentoring the younger players. After college, I worked at a tool store, a drywall tool store for 4 years where I was a manager. And I just got really bored. And my best friend and I just decided we were going to move to Lake Tahoe. So we moved. Took the leap, and I'm still shocked to this day that I did that. But we moved up there, and it was a great experience. And that's where I met a lesbian couple who kind of helped me to come to terms with who I was, because at that point I was not even sure I was a lesbian. I didn't really understand why I felt different, and they helped me a lot. It was nice to have someone to talk to about my feelings. And when I look back, I think when we moved to Tahoe, I really think I was looking for that change, because I felt stuck where I was and not comfortable in my environment. So that was the turning point for me. I stayed there for like 4 years, and then my friends that helped me to come to grips with who I was had moved back to the East Bay. So I followed them because they were a comfort to me, and I wanted to meet someone. And so that was a good move. And then I ended up moving over to Menlo Park, which you mentioned, my aunt signed me up for softball, which like I said is my comfort zone. And that's where I met Brenda. And that just changed my life as well. Currently, I work for Keysight Technologies as a program manager, managing our new product introductions. And it's pretty exciting work to see the things that people are creating and to be a part of that. So really enjoying that. And like Brenda said, just happy to be back in our home and nesting and, getting back to real life as much as we can, because I feel like we didn't necessarily have that the last 3 years, but then it seems like this is the environment we're in. So
I think this is a perfect time to jump into your meeting as a couple. I think we want to hear from you, Sue.
Okay. Yeah, so like I mentioned, I moved in with my aunt in Menlo Park, and she knew that, you know, I love softball and that's my comfort zone. And so she actually took the initiative to sign me up, and my aunt's super supportive. I mean, she was the first person I told in the family that I was gay and that I knew she would support me 100%. And so she was always my advocate and my person to go to for really personal things and advice. So she signed me up. I got to the softball team. They were called Girls Like Us, which could be Girls Like Us. I thought that was cute. And I knew it was a lesbian team predominantly. I think there are a couple straight people on the team, but I knew that. I was excited about it because I'm like, oh, cool. This is where I can meet somebody. And so, you know, I get on the team and I'm not really out. So it's not like anyone could really tell. And I didn't, you know, say it or anything. And so they used to, when I'd walk up, they used to get really quiet and like, they didn't want to scare me away if I wasn't a lesbian. So they didn't want to have their normal conversations. And I always thought it was odd, but I found out later kind of why. But I just remember, you know, meeting everyone on the team. Brenda was super nice at the time. There wasn't anyone I was, you know, like immediately attracted to or anything. Sorry, Brenda. But I just wanted to play softball and meet people and do fun stuff. And I also thought Brenda was with the shortstop. So Brenda was the third baseman and I was a left fielder. The shortstop and her, they owned a Harley Davidson together. So I just assumed that they were a couple, but turned out I found out later that they were not. What happened then is, I'm a golfer. Golfing is a big, pastime for me and Brenda, and a friend on the team invited me to play golf. So I went to this golf course on the weekend and Brenda's in the parking lot and she says, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, Elaine invited me to play golf." And she's like, I didn't know you golfed. And did you know it was a tournament? And I'm like, no, but I'm excited. I'm ready to play. And so she kind of was just acting very strange. So I go on to play this tournament. Maybe you can help me.
We were unaware if Sue was gay.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, she had long hair and this ponytail. And several years earlier on our softball team, the city had assigned a couple of players on our team who were straight. And they were phenomenal ball players. But once they realized the entire rest of the team was gay, they quit. They didn't want to play. And so we were determined to make sure that if any other players joined our team and we liked them and they fit in, we wanted to make them feel welcome. So that's one of the reasons when Sue would come up, somebody was probably talking about some tryst they had with somebody else. And we just didn't want to make her uncomfortable. So people would change the subject and it would take a little while to get the ball rolling again on the next topic. So that was one thing. And at this golf tournament, I ran into Elaine and I said, "So you invited Sue?" And she's like, "Yeah, I thought, you know, she said she played. I thought it'd be fun." I said, "Okay. Did you didn't tell her it was a tournament?" She's like, "No, I didn't tell her it was a tournament." I said, "Does she know that it's a lesbian tournament?" She's like, "Oh, shoot. I probably should have told that." And so now we're just all kind of laughing about, okay, well, she's going to figure it out pretty quickly. She seems pretty smart.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So we go on to play this tournament. I'm not on Brenda's team. I'm on another team. We win the tournament. It's awesome. Had a great time. I came out to some people during the round that didn't know. So then they knew, but Brenda still didn't really know. So then afterwards we go to this bar down in Mountain View and Brenda feels like she needs to take me under her wing and protect me. So she says, "Follow me over there and, you know, we'll go in together." We're about to walk into this bar and Brenda's like, "You know, this is a dive bar. I mean, it's a dive bar." And I'm like, "What does that mean? I mean, I don't care." And so then right as we're walking into the door, she says, "Are you gay?" And I said, "Yes." She says, "Oh, okay." So So then we sit together at the bar and we're doing the festivities of giving out the prizes for the golf tournament. And her and I just start talking, and we're just talking. Then at the end of the night, it was someone's birthday, and she's like, "Hey, do you want to come with me to this birthday party?" So then we go to this birthday party with someone on the team. And then, like, you know, I came out to them and they're all giggling at me and stuff. It was just such a funny memory. And so then Brenda found out, and we hit it off and on a different level than just playing softball. And then she invited me to the San Francisco Gay and Lesbian Film Festival for the next week. And I said, "Sure, let's go." And then she tried to invite other people, but nobody else could go. I don't know if that was a convenience or what, but it worked out great. It turned into a date and we had a great night and were able to talk a lot and sort of inseparable since then.
Brenda, we wanted to ask you if there's anything you wanted to add or clarify in Sue's story about how y'all met at the golf tournament and on the softball team.
Oh, I think she did a pretty good job.
Only
pretty good. Yeah, little details. When we went to the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival in San Francisco, as she said, you know, I invited the world to come with us and no one could come. And, you know, it was great because after the film festival, we went up to Twin Peaks. We sat and looked out at the lights of the city and we just talked. And I remember telling her, you know, learning about her and the fact that she had not been in a relationship before. And I was really, I'm older than Sue by 5 years, 5.5 years. And I was interested in settling down. I wanted to find a life partner. I didn't want to date somebody. And I kept giving her advice about, well, you need to find someone that's going to be nice and someone that's not going to hurt you and be kind. And you need to go have experiences and figure out what it is exactly that you're looking for in a partner. And I honestly wasn't even thinking me because I looked at the situation and thought, yeah, I don't want to be a test driver. I'm going to move on. You know, I'm here for friendship, and I didn't want her walking into a dive bar without knowing what she was walking into. But, you know, so that's the only addition I would add. As a softball team, we would go to Santa Cruz regularly. And there was, after we had gone to the film festival, I think Sue just decided she was going to flirt with me big time. And it took me a long time before I realized, oh my gosh, she's actually flirting with me. And how do I feel about that? I felt pretty good about it, actually. You know, we had our first kiss in the kitchen of my house as she came inside to grab her car keys and head home that night.
How sweet.
Yeah.
What was it, Sue? What was it that attracted you?
Well, you know, I was ready to settle down. I was 31. I've been waiting for this my whole life. And, you know, we had a lot in common. Our families were very important to us. We had the same interests. And so I remember thinking when she said, you know, you need to find someone who won't hurt you. And I just remember thinking, well, I don't think she would. And is she talking about herself or not? And I remember debating that in my head for a while, you know, and then I really, really liked her. I just thought this person is a very good person. I feel like we're have the same morals and values, and I didn't want to play the field. I mean, I'm not a very comfortable person meeting new people and dating and all that. So I thought, this is it. I think she's wonderful. And so we went to Santa Cruz, and I remember going on rides and I would bump into her intentionally and, you know, just kind of nudge her and stuff like that. And then we went on the teacups and we did a contest with another couple on our team to see who could spin the fastest. And Brenda and I sat on, you know, getting ready. We put our hands on the wheel, our hands touched, we looked at each other, and it was just sort of one of those magical movie moments where our eyes locked and it was like, oh. And then the ride started and we're just sitting there staring at each other with our hands touching.
And our friends are yelling at us to start spinning.
So did you all lose the contest?
Yeah. So I think that was our magic moment that we call it when lightning struck, you know, in Santa Cruz. So Santa Cruz is like the boardwalk is like our special place, you know. So I just felt like I wanted to pursue it and I was gonna. I'm still shocked I did.
Yeah. For Brenda telling us you'd never been in a relationship and then you were flirting with her. It's like, how does somebody know how to do that?
Yeah. Well, I've never been in a relationship with a woman. So.
Okay.
I tried the dating men thing quite a bit and, you know, tried to make that work and it just, for some reason, it was not working. I didn't really know why.
I'm just thinking about you, Brenda. I mean, that says a lot about you and your character as far as you saying, Sue, go spread your wings, do what you need to do. I mean, it's incredible. Is that just who you are? Tell us that part of yourself. I mean, you that way in your family?
Yes.
Well, Sue can answer.
Yes, she is.
I think that's just kind of how I was raised. I was raised where you help other people and you treat people with kindness and respect the same way that you would like them to treat you. And even if you don't get kindness and respect, you know, my mom used to tell us there's four of us kids. And she would always say, you know, you stand together, no one can conquer you. You stand alone, you're vulnerable. And she always used to also talk about, you know, some people, you're as good as anyone and you're better than a lot of others in the sense of, I think she really wanted to build up our morale and help us understand that we were fortunate. We had a family that loved each other. We had a father who provided for us. My mom was able to stay home, but not everybody had that same opportunity. And it was important for my mom, who grew up pretty dirt poor in rural Arkansas, as did my father, that we understood that and that we treated those people that didn't have the same opportunities that we had and treat them with kindness and respect.
Those are great lessons that your mom gave you and your sibs. It's wonderful. It is a good time to take a music break. You all brought a song to play. Is it your special song?
It's sort of our special song. Yeah. A friend of mine from work gave me this album right at the time Sue and I met. And she said, oh, you know, this is this gal I've discovered. I think you'll really like her. Give it a listen. And so Sue and I were listening to it. And then we discovered this song. And we just felt like, yeah, you know, if the whole world is going crazy, as long as we have each other, we kind of have a safe space right here in each other's arms. Aww. And it is the song that we danced to when we had our commitment ceremony back in 1998, prior to gay marriage being legal.
What's the name of the song and who's singing it?
It's All I Have, and the artist is Beth Nielsen Chapp.
All right, everybody, enjoy All I Have.
Can say you love me, and I'll believe that's true. Trusting you is easy, 'cause I believe in you. There is nothing as long as we're in love like this. All I have is all I need, and it all comes down to you and me. How far away this world becomes in the harbor.
If you just joined us, you were listening to Beth Nielsen Chapman, All I Have, Sue and Brenda's song, quote unquote, their song. You both have talked a lot about family. Well, we're both curious how being gay, coming out, how did that play out in your family? Sue, you talked about not being able to talk to anyone except your aunt. Right. So we were just curious how coming out was for you. When did you know, and who'd you have to talk to, and who supported you? Sue, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I think all my life I felt a little bit different, and I used to seem like different feelings for my girlfriends, kind of thing. I always pushed it down. I remember when I was probably 11 or 12, driving through Cotati and seeing two women holding hands and just going, wow, what's that? And I didn't think like, oh, ew, what's that? Or, I mean, I was intrigued and I just always have that memory. But, and then of course I thought about that looking back. And then I had trouble dating, you know, men, and just never had that spark or connection, never understood why. I remember watching an episode of LA Law and there was a lesbian kiss, and that was just like, I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, and I was excited by it. So then I'm like, oh boy, what's going on here, you know? And so that's when I moved to Tahoe and thought maybe I can explore my true self away from home. So when I did finally meet Brenda, and my family's so important to me, I really thought we're very close. My parents are, you know, 20 years younger than Brenda's parents. I really felt like I wanted to have a close relationship with them and to be totally honest with them and have them support us and be part of the family. So one weekend, I think it was 97, maybe, I went up, came up here because we didn't live here, to tell my parents. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but I was miserable because I wasn't out to them. And to me, I wanted to be completely honest and I needed them to know. And I thought it would go well, but it did not. My mom was devastated. She kind of went in her little shell and told me how that made her sick. And it was just devastating. My dad was fantastic, very supportive. My parents are very religious. They're pretty set in their ways, and also concerned with what other people think and wanting to be, you know, not making waves, staying quiet in your corner, that kind of thing. So it was very, very hard. I mean, I don't regret doing it, but it still like makes me kind of upset thinking about it. I guess they kind of came around later. I think my dad would have always been okay with it, but my mom was not, and she's kind of leads the family. So eventually, well, we invited them to our commitment ceremony and they refused to come. So that was my first heartbreak with them. Over the years, you know, they still treated us well. We were part of family gatherings and Christmas and birthdays, and all that was fine. I'm pretty sure they voted against gay marriage, you know, and they vote Republican and that kind of thing. So that always kind of hurt. But I thought by 2008, when we got married legally, that they would have come to our wedding, and they didn't. So to have them not think that they could deal with that again was just heartbreaking. So being so family, so important to me, it's really still something that I have a really hard time with, how to have a relationship with them without that full support. Luckily, Brenda's family is amazingly supportive, all her siblings and all the nieces and nephews, and between my friends, that lifts me up. And my aunt was super supportive, and my best friend was super supportive, and everyone else really is. So I cling to that, and that's been great. And my sister's not at all. She's not in my life at all because she's very evangelical and, you know, far right, Republican. She just can't accept us. So that's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah. Really sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. today.
Brenda, it sounds like your family is super supportive.
My family is. My parents are deceased. But unlike Sue, I didn't really feel the need to sit down with them and have a conversation. I don't know that I've ever really truly been in the closet, because I didn't really share what was going on personal in my life unless the individual was involved in my personal life. And when I felt that, you know, when developing relationships, and I think this is something that people don't necessarily understand, is that as a member of our community, every new person you meet, you have to come out to. You come out every new acquaintance, every new friend. And, you know, I just didn't want to do that over and over and over in my life. And so unless an individual was part of my personal life, then I would, you know, I'd slip the pronoun in, she, we, you know, my girlfriend, whatever. And I didn't react to it. And I was optimistic that the people that I was talking to wasn't going to react to it as well. So as far as being in the closet, I don't know that I ever was. And I didn't sit down and have the conversation with my parents. I actually did sit down with my siblings and say, I think I've met the one and I'm going to tell mom and dad. And they all encouraged me not to. And they just felt like, just live your life and do what you're going to do. And I was in agreement with that as long as they understood I was never going to lie about who I was seeing, who I lived with, and what I was doing. And I never wanted them to lie on my behalf. And I remember distinctly when we bought our first house together and we were bringing my mom and dad through the house and had a very nice master bedroom and a pretty nice guest bedroom, but a very nice master bedroom and bathroom. And I remember my mom saying, so who gets the master? And I said, we both do. And she just nodded. And that was it. You know, I never had a conversation with my parents. My parents, I know, knew we were together. Sue used to manage my mom and dad's checkbooks and balance them regularly. My dad would sit down and we'd have conversations about how we were investing our money. You know, so I felt very comfortable knowing that they knew. I just didn't confront them with the words. As Sue mentioned, my parents, 20 years older, I don't know how well receptive they would have been if I'd actually said the words, but they were very receptive to how we lived our life. I remember when my sister first found out I was gay, I was at a softball tournament. This was a different team before I met Sue. And we were playing in the Central Valley. And we went to a gay bar afterwards because we won the tournament and we were excited and we wanted to celebrate. And it happened to be a gay bar near my hometown. And my sister had some very good gay boyfriends. And apparently she was there with one of them. And Joey says to my sister, wow, that girl dancing looks a lot like your sister. And my sister says, no, I don't, you know, she lives in the Bay Area. She's not over here. And she started looking at me and she says, gosh, you know, Joey, she dances like my sister. So Cindy and Joey got out on the dance floor and danced over next to me and my current girlfriend at the time. And I'm face to face with my sister on the dance floor. And I just, hi, Sin. She says, hi, Brent. And that, you know, and it was interesting because after that, you know, she said, I knew long before you told me. So that's sort of my story.
Thank you so much for sharing that your story. I love it. We would like to move on to hear more about your experience. I mean, the fire experience, which was devastating for a lot of people and especially your story. If you don't mind starting that off, Sue.
You know, it's it was a hard thing to go through. I think maybe I'm really moving on from it, which is kind of cool. I know it was a real long, difficult time. We had a lot of support and from mostly from friends, rebuilding the house and all that. I think we were very concerned about whether we would want to stay in the house. And it was just such a long, difficult process that I think we were sort of like, let's just leave. Let's just be done with it. But when we moved back in and came full circle, that was huge for me. I felt instantly home and better that we got to that point. And it's just interesting. You don't know how you're going to feel until you get to that point. And you know, Brenda has a different experience, and I'm sure there's a lot more I could ramble on about, but
What about the journey of you two? I mean, having gone through that and now where you're at, you had to stick together. You had to work together. Some people don't manage to pull it off and stay together. You know, right. That's when I was in school, that's what they said to me all the time. When I went and got my license as a therapist, they say, well, it's going to test the relationship. So right. Did it test a relationship?
I really believe it brought us closer together when it first happened. Because, you know, after so many years together, you sort of have moments when you drift apart and there's just, you're not connected like that. And I would say the fire definitely brought us connected. And like, it's, you know, you and I against the world. And I feel like it did bring us closer. It changed the dynamics of what was going on in our lives, which, you know, is not a bad thing. And we did, we persevered through it. Now there were tough times after the initial shock and dealing with, oh my gosh, how do we get through this? And working all that out. There were times when we would both go through different stages of anger, grief, frustration, those sorts of things. And we did have to work through a lot of those moments, and it has been tough relationship wise as well. So we've kind of seen it all, where it brought us together. Then it kind of, you know, made us, you know, more not as comfortable at times. So maybe you can add to that, Brenda.
I think the time frame when where the fires happened was really a sense of change for both of us. Within an 18-month period, we lost both my parents. We lost our two cats. I retired from my job, and then we lost our home. A lot of loss. I still get emotional. And I think from a standpoint of going through the fire and not knowing what you need even to survive, because you've never wanted for anything. You know, we both had good jobs our entire lives. If we wanted something, if we needed something, we took care of it. We took care of others. So to be in a position where we needed help was very foreign. Yeah. I'm sorry. Hold on.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, not something we're comfortable with to ask for help and to need help. So we did try to go it alone as best we could at times, you know.
Yeah, I'm much better at giving than I am receiving. And it was interesting because I think a lot of our friends weren't really sure how to engage with us. Some were, you know, overpowering support. Some were absent because they just didn't know what to say. My siblings were phenomenal. They were there with us just about every step of the way, which is good because unfortunately, my brother and sister-in-law lost their home and his business in Paradise a year later. So it was really good position to be in because I could give again. I could help. I could help them get through it. But the fire, not just the fire, but the 18 months that encompassed the time frame of the fire, I think it changed me tremendously.
In what way?
I guess I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm not emotionally connected to this house. It's been a project for me because I was the one available to rebuild it. And I was the one available and had some construction knowledge due to my brother and father, who had his own construction company, be able to speak the language and understand what was happening with our house and then be able to translate that back to Sue in English at the end of each day. So it was almost like I didn't retire, really. I just moved into a different job. You know, I had a love-hate relationship with that job because there were times when reconstruction went smoothly. There were times when it didn't. I also was the person managing the insurance activities. And we were involved in an insurance group, which we found through different social platforms, a very small group of people that had the same insurance company that we did, not a very popular company here on the West Coast. So there weren't as many people insured by them. And they've been a tremendous resource from dealing with insurance to, you don't have to explain yourself because they know what you've gone through because they went through the same thing. I was involved in helping other people with their insurance claims, helping them go through their list of contents to try to maximize what they could get from a payout policy. Everybody was underinsured. Very few people have been able to rebuild their homes based on what they had it insured for. We feel fortunate that we're here, we're back in our home. You know, we're on a life journey together. We're just in different stages and having different experiences. And we just know that we're going in a direction that is together. And as long as we're headed in that same direction, we're okay with that. We try our best to support each other on this journey.
I would like you each to answer this question. Just take a moment to think about it. But I'm very curious about lessons learned from your experience.
I think I used to place a lot of value on stuff. I'm a thrift store, garage sale, consignment store, eBay, Craigslist. We used to be, you know, an online shopper and then garage sales. I loved them. And I used to collect a lot of different things for no other reason than I just liked them. I had a cat collection dating back to, gosh, when I was 8 years old. And losing all those things, I don't want to collect anything. You know, it's like I don't want to hold on to things that I might lose again. And I also don't want to be I don't want the cumbersomeness that comes along with having a bunch of stuff. One of the things that we had talked about before the fire was the potential of downsizing. We have a large home. We didn't necessarily need a large home. We wanted to travel and we're maybe thinking about getting something smaller that was kind of a home base and doing a lot of traveling. But the question we always had was, what are we going to do with all this stuff? We have, you know, every closet is jam-packed full. And what are we going to do with all this? And now we don't have that. We don't have all this stuff. And the very few things that when we did our inventory list, you know, thousands and thousands of items that you have in your home down to, you know, 12 pair of white socks, that level of detail. We can look at that list and between us, I think there's only about 50 items that, man, we would give anything to have those back. The rest of it is just stuff. So stuff is stuff.
Sounds like a pretty important lesson. Pretty huge lesson. What about you, Sue?
I think it's sort of about life's journey and how everyone in life goes through tough times and things. And I really used to just agonize about everything. And I think the fire for me has kind of made me realize that maybe not make such a big deal of everything because, you know, life is a journey and every day is different. And You take steps every day to move forward and do what you can. And just really that, I mean, it's also kind of made me a more social person in the terms of when we moved to Windsor and I kind of had an opportunity to just be kind of a different person. And I just remember meeting neighbors and talking to people. And I used to not do that. I used to just hide in my house and, you know, a lot of good things came on, maybe not lessons, but just a lot of good things for me came out of it in terms of just personal growth and, you know, understanding people going through things and learning more empathy. I mean, I think I've always been pretty empathetic, but maybe more superficially or something. I don't know. I'm still working through that, but Just being more open to meeting new people and new experiences. And, you know, for me, it was kind of a carefree time at times. I mean, I still used to get very upset and angry and stuff, but a lot of it was like, you know, hey, the universe has done this. This has happened. Let's just get through it and try to do what we can to make ourselves happy. And, you know, so there's a lot for me, and like, it's hard to articulate it.
No, you did a good job.
We want to thank you both for being here with us and sharing your stories and, you know, your relationship and this experience around the fire. Is there some kind of wisdom that you can offer around coming out, around experiencing hardship, whatever you would like to offer our listeners? Because it's really important we have our guests share something about themselves, because people are listening who might take something away from what you have to offer. So Brenda, you want to start?
Sure. I think I mentioned earlier about being on this journey together and paddling our boat in the same direction. And, you know, as long as you're paddling and heading in one direction and you're doing that together, you'll get to your destination. But I also think one of the key things that the fire for me, and you know, I say the fire, but I don't know if it's just the fire. It could be the loss of my parents. It could be the loss of my work community every day. I still engage with people, but I don't engage with them every day. So it's a little different. But I think that I've come to a point in my life where, gosh, you know, if you're not paddling in the same direction that I'm paddling in, I need you to get out of my boat. And I need to stop banging my head against the side of the boat to try to get you to come with me. I just need you to let you go your way and I'll go my way, because I'm not getting what I need out of it. And that's probably not something that I've done before. I try to make things work, and I look for opportunities to keep people engaged and keep relationships open. But I find I have a lot less patience for that now. Maybe the word of wisdom there is that it's okay if people are holding you back, it's okay to let them go and see what else is there. The other piece of wisdom I contemplated sharing, this is actually my brother's wisdom. This is how he describes his 40 plus year relationship with his wife. And, you know, being in a partnership is like a dance. And sometimes, Diana, you might be doing the twist, and sometimes, Sheridan, you might be doing a waltz, and that's fine. Go do it. But periodically, and when it feels right, or when you need each other, you guys got to come together and do the same dance. And it's kind of this circle of doing your own thing and circling back to each other and doing your own thing and growing and learning and being individuals as well as being partners. And you know, the first time you described that to me, I thought, my God, you're my brother. You know, it was just kind of a profound thing, because, you know, you see couples and you don't know how they really interact and behave. But this whole concept of doing your own thing, but then also doing this thing together, was really important to me. And I wanted that in my relationship.
I like the relationship dance idea, because I do that in my practice. A lot of couples come in for help, but they come from different backgrounds, you know, different family lifestyles, whatever, and they come together and they try and do a dance. So that's a metaphor I use all the time. They're stepping on, I say, you guys are stepping on each other's toes. You got to look, you know, the tango, you got to like move together and, you know, work it together. It's a powerful metaphor. I like that, he knows that. He knows that language, your brother. That's wonderful.
He surprises me sometimes.
Beautiful. Sue, what about your wisdom?
Well, something I've been thinking a lot about for me is to trust myself. So I say to people, trust yourself, trust your intuition, look inside for the answers. I have spent my life always looking to other people for their opinions and what they think, and asking for advice from many, many people and collecting all this data. And, you know, the answers are within us. And I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out, but I would say, trust yourself. I am working on this to trust myself, trust that what I believe and think is good is okay is okay. I don't need other people's validation. And that's something, you know, pretty recent for me that I'm really embracing. So that would be my words of wisdom.
Thank you so much, both of you.
Really, thank you. Beautiful.
Welcome. We want everyone to remember, like Sue and Brenda, that you too can be living proof that through sharing your obstacles and your wisdom, you can make our world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. Remember, if you missed listening to one of our shows live, you can listen on demand to most of our shows anytime you want on our website at outbeatradio.com. And the KRCB mobile app is always available to use on your mobile devices for listening to Outbeat Radio anywhere in the world with internet access. It's free, easy to use, and available now for Apple and Android devices. You're listening to KRCB Radio, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.